yeah. You're a bit of an Austin 7 legend.
Well, I am in this house. No, I think we both are. Well, pretty well everything I've done it with Eileen. Couldn't have done it without her. She's navigated me. She's driven me. You drove about 20, we reckon about 20% of the distance across America. When we went to America, 2006, we'd been all over Europe with Chummy, or with our Vauxhall Chevette that we had up until fairly recently. But America, you know, we never had any idea that we'd ever drive in America, possibly. Well, we had visited once or twice. But then, let's go back to these Brooklands continental runs. And there was a couple called Ron and Diana. No, Ron and...
Veronica.
No, Ron and Veronica Garside from Swindon. No, they were from South London at the time. They had a little girl, and she used to be dragged all round Europe in the back of a tatty old, first of all, a short wheelbase box, and she was cramped up in the back there with all the luggage, because they were camping at the time, weren't they? Later on, he got an even more tatty Austin 7 Cabriolet, and she was getting bigger, of course. When we started organising trips, they didn't come with us. You know, they only seemed to be happy going with the Brooklands crowd. But we kept in touch at Bewley and various other club functions. And then we learnt that this little girl that had been curled up in the back of the Austin 7 had gone to America, gone to live in America, and to work in America. And while she was over there, she had mum and dad over there, as you would do. No doubt proud of, you know, to show her around. Took mum and dad to Williams, Arizona, on one occasion, which is on Route 66. Went to a cafe there, and while they were eating, Ron says, "I'd love to do Route 66. And that's as far as it went. But trouble is, he died before he could do it. So Ron, at the funeral, I wasn't there, we weren't at it, but Vince was there, as was a lot of other club people, and said, little girl, Diana, said to Vince, "Do you know," she said, "I'd love to do Route 66 in Dad's memory. Do you think we could organise it between us?" And they did. And we were lucky to be invited. There was only five cars. She'd met a fellow over there, as girls do. He was going to help driving and help navigating, because even though we'd got a very good guidebook called Easy 66, it still needed a bit of interpretation. And I think, anyway, I'm jumping the gun a bit. We had a meeting. We all took on a job. One was organising spares, one was organising contacts, which was ours. We made contacts with most places that we stopped. Well, we had to first of all decide where we would stop, how many miles we can do in a day reasonably, which was about 150. We organised the accommodation. Various of us made contact with people over there. Some people we knew, but other people we just write to Route 66 Association of Illinois or Springfield or something, and all came good when we come to do it. I mean, when we were offered the chance to go, our first reaction was, "Oh, it's going to be beyond our means." Then we found out that the ferry to get the cars over there is under £1,000, including insurance and dock charges, which is like port charges, yeah. And then, of course, we looked at hotel prices and food prices over there, which so much cheaper than here or Europe. We decided we could do it. And we knew all about Route 66 because, like everybody else, we'd heard Nat King Cole sing about it. So you couldn't tell us anything about Route 66. In the end, we was all sorted. We fixed dates and avoiding the heat of the summer, where we were told that we'd just shrivel up and be found dead at the side of the road on the Mojave Desert. So we avoided the heat of the summer. Off we went down to Dover, parked the cars there. One of our friends wasn't on the run, but he volunteered to go down and drive them onto the ferry, which they were a bit reluctant to do, the ferry people, but they said, no, we our guys are paid to do that job. But they did drive them off at the other end, and they drove them on coming back, which worried us quite a lot, but given their due, they didn't do any damage mechanically or bodily. The only thing is, they stole me yellow dusters out of my glove pockets. Would you believe? We were told to make a locker for our tools, which I did, under the seat. But anyway, we did that. The ferry, of course, only took us to New York, or Newark, in fact. And we had to wait around there for them to clear the docks and get on, to become available. So we had to stay there a few days, which gave us an opportunity to look around New York. Then eventually we got on the road, and of course the first thing we have to do is to drive to Chicago, because Route 66 runs from Chicago to Los Angeles. And that's just over 900 miles, so that's a week, especially as we stopped roughly halfway to Butler, where the American Austin and the Bantam were made. And we spent two nights there, and we went over the Bantam Museum. We were showed the factory, which is now derelict. And we were met by a local group of enthusiasts. Lovely occasion that, wasn't it? One of them had him round to had us all round to their house, which is a typical American house in large grounds, no fence round it, not even a white fence. And they fed us. Anyway, then we head off towards Chicago, and you had one of the worst bits of the drive, didn't you? From about 50 miles outside of Chicago into Chicago, we managed to avoid a side turning which would have got us to our hotel without going on the interstate. So we landed up going into Chicago on the interstate, and poor old Eileen fighting it out with the big trucks and, you know, and the, well, I can't say they're fast American cars because they don't drive them fast, do they? And then we got to Chicago. We were met by a couple which we are still in contact with on that thing. And John and Nikki Miller. And they introduced us to someone who gave us a guided tour of Chicago. Because we decided whilst we're there, we've got to have a couple of nights here at least. By that time, it was there that Diana and her boyfriend turned up in a hire car, didn't they? Which was to be our support car. We'd gone as far as Chicago without support. We stopped two or three times during the journey. It's 2,500 miles, round figures, which we made a bit longer because it took side trips to Las Vegas. Not as Elvis, yeah. Mm. He sings about Las Vegas, but it's Las Vegas, which we soon learned. So we had a side trip to Las Vegas, which put about 200 miles on our trip. And we had a 100 miles detour to the Painted Desert, which was beautiful scenery, scenic. Bit with these rocks and hills that are a bit like the ones in the Isle of Wight, all layered in different colours. Yeah, we had booked our hotels, which we needn't have done if we were doing it on our own. But when you're doing it as a number of people, we don't want to get to a place where somebody's staying in this hotel and somebody else is staying in that one, so we all want to stay together. But it all worked out all right, didn't it? And the distances weren't bad. I have to say that we were the ones that were struggling a bit with pace. In fact, I was a little worried because I was driving flat out to keep them. All the others had Phoenix cranks in their engines and had a good old original Austin crank. And Vince was so worried about us that he actually went to the trouble of packing and wrapping and packing a crankcase and rods already fitted to go in my engine when it packed up. But he didn't, and he still hasn't. 154,000 in our hands.
Wow.
Well, that's over 41 years.
Yeah, but that's... And with the same bottom end in the engine.
Yeah. Wow. Same clutch.
Wow.
I bought a new clutch. I bought new clutch linings, oh, about 10 years ago, because I was having the engine out. I thought, well, it must need them by now. But it didn't. It's been lubricated all this time, oil getting through from the gearbox. But I've changed the oil seal now, and I don't get the clutch slip that I used to get about every 100 or 200 miles. Anyway, poor old Dingo was really thrashed, wasn't it? It was flat out keeping up with them. I think they were all mildly tuned. All I'd done is filed off a few corners in the combustion chamber.
What sort of speed were you doing then, would you say?
Well, it depends on whether you believe the speed or not.
Well, generally not.
I think we were probably doing 40 to 50. Whereas I tend, even then, even more now, but even then, to back off a little bit when I'm going downhill, give it a little bit of a rest rather than flat out downhills, when it would show 55. But anyway, despite that, it got me there without breaking a crank or throwing a rod or anything dramatic like that. All it did is the ball joint on the throttle linkage came disattached and fit that again round a hot exhaust. That's a very trying job. And the interesting thing is that Diana's boyfriend, whose name is River, incidentally, and he's now a club member and now got an Austin 7 himself, he was so anglicised that while I was fiddling around getting this linkage fixed up again, he'd got the kettle out and was brewing up a cup of tea by the side of the road in Tulsa.
What was the attitude of the American people, you know, the indigenous people, to these Austin 7s?
In advance, they were almost saying, don't do it. Because you won't be able to do it without using the interstates, and they'll run you off the interstates. But you can't do it without the interstates, just the same as you can't go up the Great North Road without using the A1 or bits of motorway. So anyway, we ignored that. When we were there, they were, you know, astounded really that we were doing this in a, you know, pocket-sized car. And, well, you know, it's big enough. And they accepted that.
So what do you sort of think about your future journeying? Are you ever likely to do any of these long runs again?
Would you do it again? Would you do anything like that again?
No, I don't think so.
No. Yeah. Well, you've been, every time you... She's worse than me with Route 66. She's got... Dan just got it over her head, but she's got it in her head. Because, I mean, she's... For years after that, she used to get quite excited. Even she saw a 66 on her number plate or a telephone number or something. But of course now with 66 on all the number plates, it's good.
But
you'd do it again, wouldn't you?
But what about other runs? You know, European runs or runs in the UK?
I think European runs we're going to have to pay a lot more for our insurance, I suspect, now. You know, travel insurance. I mean, I already have to pay extra because they say I've got high blood pressure. Because when they ring me up and they ask me a lot of questions, they say, have you got high blood pressure? I say, no, I take tablets for it. She said, well, in that case, you've got high blood pressure. So we have travelled quite a lot. We've been all over Europe, either in Air Austin or in the Chevette. That took us to 19 countries and three principalities.
There's still a lot of runs to do in the UK, though.
Oh, yes. There? Well, we've done the Great North Road.
I know, I read your article about it.
Did you?
I did.
That's worthwhile.
Yes.
We've done the North Coast 500.
Oh, yes.
Around the top of Scotland, which they're claiming to be the British version of Route 66, which, of course, is nothing like. It's much more picturesque for a start. Mm. We enjoyed that so much, we want to do it again. Like to do it in the Chamois, but I don't think I'm prepared to risk. It's not in good nick now. It's one compression ratio. One compression is well down. It's running as sweet as ever, but you know, I feel I might be chancing it if I put worked out about 1,800 miles, didn't it? By the time we'd driven up to Inverness, round the loop, and come back via Blackpool, where one of our sons lived. And I don't think I'm prepared to do that. But I'd be happy to do it again in a Rover 25. Mm. And I'm saying this, but you agree there, don't you?
Yeah.
We also thought, well, we've done the coast of the north of Scotland. Let's try the west coast of Wales. So that's something we might do. But we want to get our... We've still got medication things going on. This is just a final check, I think, after everything I've had. I mean, it's nothing by most standards, but... We were going to go camping in Kent because we both come from Kent. Eileen's a Sheerness lass. And I come from northwest Kent, Welling, not Wellin. But we were going to camp. We had actually found a site that was convenient for all the sites that we wanted to revisit. But then we had this lot. Now it's too late to camp, so we've actually booked up Travelodge for Medway and kind of use that as about three weeks time for just going, you know, living in the past a bit.
So you're not planning on reconditioning your Chummy engine then?
While it's going as well as it is, although it shouldn't, I don't think I am prepared to. I might do, you know, once this is all settled down, I might feel a bit more fit to do it. One of our sons, the one that's running the Box Saloon now, and who Lindsay was going to go, or is navigating for in a fortnight's time, He's done several jobs on that engine, including. Oh no, he's had it stripped down, and he's off to help. But the trouble is, he's hardly ever here. Well, he works for a race car manufacturer or race engine manufacturer. Now the cars that they were making are now ineligible for the category of. That category of racing, they're supplying the engines. And he goes around representing the factory all over the world. I mean, he was at Austin, Texas, believe it or not, last weekend. He has said he'll come down and help, and he has done. I have to admit to being giving in to my age at last. I've tried not to, and I still do things that people my age perhaps are not supposed to do. Like, we go out cycling quite a lot, partly because we like it, partly because Stephen, you may not have noticed, but it's got a lovely network of cycle routes, more paralleling nearly all the roads. And we were out, was it yesterday?
You was.
Yeah, and the day before we were out together. So we like that. We still want to travel, but I think we might content ourselves to travel within this country.
Sure. Why not?
There's plenty to see.
Absolutely.
Eileen wants to go up to Holy Island, or Holy Island, or whatever it is. Not because she's very holy.
No. It's very beautiful around there. Mm. Very beautiful.
We've seen it from the pub at... what's that pub?
Bamborough?
No.
No.
The causeway that takes you on to Holy Island. There's a pub on the corner.
Don't know the name.
Well, we've gone down the causeway as far as we can go without risking not being able to come back. We did that on our Great North Road run.
Yes.
But Ernie wants to do that. And I want to see Hadrian's Wall.
Yes, very good. I think there's lots of things to do. The next year... there's going to be a Pennine run.
I think there's been a Trans-Pennine run several years
ago. Oh, yes. Yeah, no, there's a Pennine run, though, that's going to start in... because a friend of mine's organising it's going to start in Derbyshire. I think it's probably Matlock area somewhere to start. And it's going to finish up somewhere in the Borders. A two-day run. You know, with an overnight stop and stop in a hotel at the end and have a bit of a dinner with everybody together and everything. That might be interesting to you.
Yeah, might well be.
Because I know Malcolm Parker, who is arranging that, he gets a super duper deal with these hotels, you know, where we can all stay and it includes dinner and all that sort of thing, you know. So. And we usually have a nice time. And it's not just Austin Sevens, but it's mainly Austin Sevens. It's, you know, it's organised by the pre-war Austin Seven Club, or it's under their
wing.
Yeah, because you have to have a special licence these days to do all that.
Yes, that's right, yeah. And the route approved.
Yeah, that's right. But Malcolm's runs are really nice, and the route instructions are always very good, you know, the tulip diagram books.
Oh yes, yes.
You know, proper job really. And the entry fees are nothing, you know. I mean, I think the last one was about £10 or something, you know. So, yeah. We've just done one. We called it the Cumbrian Run. And that was very nice.
Well, so, we certainly
both... You might think about that next year.
Yeah. Yeah, we, as you see from what we've done John O'Groats to Land's End, we've done Lowestoft to Land's End. That one we've done three times, I think. Because that's extreme east to near enough extreme west. It isn't the very furthest west, but it's it rings up, it rolls off the tongue, Lowestoft to Land's End.
So this car, Dingo, that? I mean, you say it's done 154,000 miles, that engine. And has it never had anything major done to it in that time, the engine I'm talking about?
I think I'm on about the third block.
Ah, right, yeah.
I've lost count, really. I think it's...
Yeah.
I think I've never run a big end to the extent that I've had to take the plug out or stop it,
yeah.
Stop running it. But occasionally, when I've felt it getting a bit noisy, I've taken it down and I've found a big end. More often than not, they just break up. Mm. But I've never had one remetalled. I'll just get another one out the bin. See if it's tight on the shaft, and then scrape it in. And I know it's oval. It must be after 154,000 miles in our hands.
Yeah.
So God knows how many. You know, before 1965. So I just, you know, scrape it in, but I know from doing that it's, you know, it's got high spots. You can feel them, of course. But I comfort myself with the knowledge that the big end journals are getting well lubricated.
Yeah.
And it keeps going, touch wood.
Yeah.
And I also, you know, reckon... And I think I've had a metallurgist agree with a principle that if the crank hasn't broken after 150,000 miles, it's got no flaws in it. So it won't break, yeah. Says he.
Yeah. I think that's probably right.
But so anyway, I mean, it's been such a bloody marvellous car to us. Taken us 14 countries across the US, over the Alps several times, round Yorkshire. Dave Dickinson's tried to find all the hills that he can to break it. we climbed that Rosedale chimney, isn't it? Which is, yeah, reputedly one in three.
It is, at one part.
At one point. Mm. Which climbed that, and our German friend, who had a Vince Leek engine in his Opel, he had to go up it backwards. And that was a sight to see, because he was standing in it, steering with his, like that, and operating. He looked like a panzer commander.
Yeah, I must say that I've had to go Rosedale chimney backwards in a car. And it was a Super Sports.
Was it? Mm. I'm trying to find a Super Sports.
Are you?
Mario Marti, who's built that orange holster up there, 91. Mm-hmm. He wants, one of his next jobs is to build a Super Sports. I rang or contacted John Miles, who used to race one, but no, he's long since passed it on and doesn't know where it is. He thinks possibly to Adley Hallaby, and I don't know if you know where Adley Hallaby is.
I do, yeah.
Has he gone back to Lebanon?
No, he's got property in Spain.
Ah. Yeah, property here, I know.
I don't think he'd be selling his Super Sports.
No, he doesn't want to buy it. He just wants some measurements from it.
Oh, I see. Right.
Yeah.
If he just wants measurements for it, I'll tell you who's got one that he can measure. My old one, Tony Betts, has got it.
Has he?
Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah. And that's... You know, it's a decent car.
Yeah. Well, this Swiss guy that Mario Marti, he's another one I've met thanks to the Austin and thanks to our trip to Liechtenstein.
So, you know, your car is kind of like one of the family, I think.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And you obviously have made this huge circle of friends all over the world to do with Austin Sevens.
Sometimes only loosely. I mean, we're like the aforementioned Kathy Miller, we keep getting news from her neck of the woods about Route 66 and the Route 66 hoedowns and such like.
I remember seeing Ken over the years in magazines, etc., a lot of photographs that you had taken because the pictures were credited to your name. So are you a bit of a photographer then, really?
Yes, I am, yeah. I used to be I never got to processing colour photography. Well, I tried it once. It was a lot of bother. But I used to, I even see on that board there, I've got a load of black and white pictures. I still like black and white. Photography is so different with digital. But on the other hand, you can process it, process them in daylight and watch telly at the same time, or talk to Eileen at the same time. Well, they used to come up in the dark room with me sometimes, didn't you? Kicking and screaming. Yeah, I do enjoy photography. I suppose I don't take it quite so seriously now. I very rarely take a picture for the sake of the picture rather than for the sake of the subject.
I understand.
I've got one picture which is my main screensaver on that, which I think is the best picture I've ever taken. The bridge at Mostar, so-called Peace Bridge. It's a Bosnian town, small town in Bosnia, where the only way to keep the Muslims and the Serbs from fighting each other was to blow the bridge up, because they were either side of the river. And that created peace for a while. And if you go there, and it was blown up in 1993, it was rebuilt about 2 years before we went there, which was about 2005. But everywhere around the town you go, there are little signs saying "Remember 1993" or just "Remember 93." Which, you know,
is making quite a noise, that.
Yeah, that's it's because I've been trying to put something on the disc and it's not wanting to go.
That's stopped now.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Trying to think how to get it up now. Anyway, yeah.
Sorry, would you mind sitting back where you're sitting? Because I can't get
to
there.
No. Yeah, I still get a lot of satisfaction out of getting a nice picture. I don't know if there's any around here.
You must have a big collection of pictures of Austin Sevens.
Yeah, a lot of them was used in the Purvis book. I think there's about 120 in there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're all in a 7x5 box in one of those drawers.
Oh, that's interesting, because the pre-war Austin Seven Club is hoping to republish that book and correct a lot of the mistakes that, you know, are in the book.
Yes.
Because there's a lot of mistakes, I think.
Yes, I've heard of errors. I haven't found anything serious myself.
No.
But I'm not that much of a historian. I'm more of practical.
Yes. What would you say then, from an Austin 7 point of view, is your sort of big driver? You know, what is the thing that enthuses you most?
I think that the fact that the Austin 7, in my experience, can be an extension of yourself.
Could you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah, because it's so connected. You're so connected to the mechanism, and the mechanism so connected to the road. Most cyclists say this about motorbikes, so they become extensions of their own body, their own self. What do you say? You're not saying much, are you?
No, well,
it doesn't matter, you're saying.
Is that all right?
Oh, yeah, of course it is.
That's why I've kept quiet.
No, of course it is.
Right.
Why do you like the Austin 7? I tell you what, there's a story there. I mean, shall I tell you that story?
Yeah.
And this is probably, maybe, why she likes Austin 7s. But as a child, or as a youth, I always used to say, no, I don't want a car. I love my bike. And I used to cycle a lot. Not as much more than we do now. And then I went in the Air Force. One day, sitting in the billet, going through the local paper, and this is 1952, remember, I saw a car advertised for under 100 quid, £29.19/6. Cool. I read this out to the billet, and somebody said, what is it? Oh, I said, it's an Austin 7, my dad used to run those. Hey, somebody else said, well, why don't you buy it? I said, I haven't got any money. He said, I'll lend it to you. He did, and I bought it. £29.19/6, just under 30 quid. And at that time, you couldn't find anything for under £100. Doesn't matter how old or how decrepit. So, yeah. My dad came down, because I didn't drive, I was a biker. And he drove it back, didn't have enough power to get up River Hill in Kent, over the Downs. And we got it home. Dad had run Austin 7s before the war. He used to buy them about 2 years old, run them for 2 years, and then buy another 2 year old one, so he was always reasonably up to date. But anyway, he knew what he was doing when it comes to doing the engine, and he really rebuilt the engine for me. Or, you know, we did it together, and I learned a lot from him, you know, scraping in bearings and gapping rings and things like that. But the reason it didn't get up River Hill and it was so lacking in power is all the piston rings, or 90% of the piston rings, were in the sump. The bores were so worn. So we had it reboard, new pistons. And that's the only engine I've ever got, you know, really done a complete restoration on it. But even then, I don't think we actually did do big ends. But anyway, having done it up, I learnt to drive in it during my 24-hour leaves. some of which I used to cycle back home from Watling, Kent, near Eastbourne, about 60 miles. Eventually passed my test in it, drove down to Maidstone to the council, county council offices to get my full licence, and then thought, well, I don't need to go back to tomorrow, really. I'd left my licence for some, my pass for somebody else to hand in for me. So I went in a day late and then got penalised a couple of weeks jankers for that. And so did the guy that I asked to hand in. Anyway, that was the car. It was 27 Chummy. The body was, it had been extended at the back. Remember, it's a 27 with no chassis extensions, you know, beyond the rear spring. So how it held together, I don't know, because we used to go to the town of Hastings or Eastbourne from the camp with four up. And it never broke in half.
Unbelievable.
Didn't have a decent battery in it. It was all clapped out. We used to stall it at the traffic lights. Four great humping airmen used to jump out the side, push it across the lights, and I'd let the clutch out just before, and we'd carry on. But anyway, come the demob leave, I did something which nowadays would be considered completely sacrilegious. I took that body off, threw it away, and built that body. And I did that in my demob leave, and plus a couple of weeks, but pretty quick by most standards. And then with a friend, went down to Sheerness, where my dad had a permanent caravan installed, you know, sort of weekend holiday caravan. And with this friend, and showed him round the Isle of Sheppey, and there's some cliffs on one part of the Isle of Sheppey. Nothing is terribly picturesque, but the nearest thing to a bit of a seascape is the Warden Cliffs, and took him up there, and that's where we spied this young woman wearing a strapless sundress, trying to get a bike over a stile. So, being the fine upright gentleman that we were, we helped her over with it. My friend actually took a dress, but it was me that followed it up, and a couple of weeks later, I went, because I couldn't ring you, could I? There was no mobiles, and you didn't have a phone. I think I wrote to you and asked you to phone me at home, because we were, you know, very wealthy compared with her parents, because we had a phone in the house. Anyway, you did phone up, and we arranged to meet. And that's where we've had our first meal together, in that little cafe come post office come village store. I'll show it to you before you go. I took her there for a meal, for lunch, of beans on toast. And of course the body on the on that car when we first took it out was just unpainted aluminium, nice and shiny. And she always reckoned it was the shiny body that attracted her, yeah. But it certainly didn't put her off. And
So you really think that the Austin 7 helps you get your lifelong partner?
Yeah, I don't know.
It was the car that did it.
Yeah. So, no, it was...
What?
It did start of so many things. It was the start of so many things.
Fantastic. So, Ken, I think we sort of got probably enough material now, but I'd just like to ask you, you know, what you would say or what you think about younger people now who are, you know, perhaps thinking about Austin 7s or interested in them, because there are a few young people that are interested in them, as you know. Would you sort of have any advice for them?
Well, if you've got the opportunity, is try it. Try them. If you can get somebody to let you have a test drive, you may well, as I did, fall in love with them, because they're so much more mechanical and more personal than a modern car. I mean, I can compare both Irene and I. After we'd retired from full time, we used to work for Europcar, and I remember taking a Mercedes. Sorry about this, but taking it down, delivering it to a Mercedes, not that, well, it would have been 10 or 15 years older than yours, down to Wood Green, wasn't it? And bringing back a Ford Escort van. And I always said I enjoyed driving that Escort van back much more than taking the Mercedes down, because the Mercedes, it was so impersonal, you know. It was so comfortable, you know, you just didn't feel a part of it. And to some extent, our Rover 25 is a bit like that. But I think certainly all of our kids at one time or other have been interested. Starting with their eldest, he raced with the 750 Club for quite a few years, but he'd driven Chummy and the Box Saloon at various times. And in fact, he did buy a Chummy, I think, was it just after he finished racing or during his racing, I think, from somebody who was a bit short of money at the time. And he said, this guy said, if you ever sell it, you know, offer it back to me. And that's what happened. So he had it for about 6 months and then sold it back to the bloke, I think for about the same as he gave for it. Second eldest, he had a little sports... No, he bought a Ruby. And then somebody had got a little sports Austin, only a special. Nothing special about it, really, other than it was a two-seater. It was quite fast. And he swapped his Ruby for that. He raced it for, like I did, a race for race Chummy for 3.5 seasons.
Did you?
Yep.
You raced Dingo?
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
Racing was quite different in the 70s to what it is now. It's so controlled, and if you haven't got a Phoenix crank and a 10 mile engine, you don't stand a chance. And I only won one thing, and that was driver of the day, which I think was out of either cheek or just out of sympathy at Snetterton.
Yeah.
Our second eldest, Graham, race this little sports Austin for about three seasons. Colin, the third eldest, he bought a Cambridge Special from Bill Butler, which had a ruby radiator and bonnet, and he converted that. Somehow we managed to find a chummy type radiator, which is much more appropriate. And he raced that for a while. And then he bought an 1172 or a 1300. Raced that for, he did about six races in that. He didn't like that as much as the Austin. But that's the one that's taken over the box saloon, and he's now doing a lot of events. He's going to a lot of VSCC events. He's been to Prescott, and which we haven't been to since about 1954, have we? And he's doing navigationals. And in the time that he's got really into the club and into the movement, he knows a lot more people than I do. So that's Mark III. Youngest boy, Gary, he's built an Ulster replica Chris Gould body. One of the last of his original mould. And Bill did a lovely job of it. He did it as an apprentice project when he was working at British Aerospace. But he never raced it. I practiced it once, and I'll never live it down, but I was so busy talking to some Australians that were over here that I missed the actual going out on the parade lap. And I shall never live that down.
No, you won't.
But he wants to keep it like it is, you know, immaculate. And I keep saying, get out and enjoy it. Oh, he says, have it looking like yours, Dad, and within 10 years. Because mine does look a bit second hand now.
Mm.
But hell, it's given us so much fun and taken us so many places.
I must admit, I think that cars are for using, you know. I don't.
Well, I agree entirely. And I suppose because we've given Colin that one. I mean, the box, the family, my daughter. Yeah, we mustn't forget my daughter, because she ran the box. She and her then fiance ran it from about the time soon after we got Chummy on the road, because we liked Chummy so much compared with the box, we hardly used the box. And it got laid up, and she came round with her boyfriend and said, Dad, can we get Chummy, can we get the box out? Which actually we called a spring box. Seemed appropriate name because didn't have a very good shock absorber was on the back. And I said, yeah, of course. And they got it out and they did the EC run with us. That was, what was it, about 1,500 miles, something like that. And then they split up. And the box got laid up again. Then she bought Colin. Yeah, Colin had an Ashley for a while, fiberglass Ashley. He used to use that quite a lot. In fact, the first time we went to work in a car that wasn't an Austin 7 without windscreen was on a winter morning when the windscreen on the car that he just bought that had got a windscreen, Morris 1100, because he wasn't used to windscreens, and he didn't realise what happened to them in the frost, and he drove off to work and ran straight into the back of another car because he couldn't see it. But Linda, she was going to do the Ashley up. It was getting a little bit floppy, wasn't it? The body was sagging. But then she got offered, and I can't remember how it came about, but she got offered a Hamlin Deluxe, which is the all-enveloping body, which she had for a while, and they ran for a while with her first boyfriend, with Graham, and even did one of our, what we used to call Lambeau d'Automne, a weekend in France. And I think she did two of those with us, or they did two of them with us. But that's right, when they split up, he left the Hamlin with Linda, and for a while it laid in the garage of her now husband's house. But he took no interest in it at all, and eventually they decided to sell it, and they sold it back to the Hamlin family. And it's been beautifully restored. You may have seen it at Bewley's, lovely silver silver paint job.
That's nice.
Yeah, so we're disappointed it's out of the family, but it's nice to see that it's been...
Loved.
Yeah, very much so. Couldn't have gone to a better place.
That's good.
So one way or another, all the kids have been, and in some cases still are, interested.
Excellent. So, I take it you went to the do at Warwick, did you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because obviously we've got, coming up in the not too distant future, the 100th.
Yes, yes.
2022. 2022.
Well, we're planning to be there, aren't we?
Good. Because we've already booked Warwick again.
I heard that, yes. Yeah, I keep in touch with association meetings with Janet and Jill. You know, Janet Edroff and Jill Davis. Who, incidentally... Janet lives 200 yards down the road, and consequently we knew her late husband very well. We knew Jill's husband quite well as well, nowhere near so well. But anyway, we came back from Route 66, extolling the virtues of Route 66 and how much we'd enjoyed it. We'd been all over Europe, but nothing's like doing Route 66. The welcome you get with the locals, the fact that you see America almost as you imagine it might have been in the immediate post-war years, you know, not brash and all flashy, nice little friendly little motels and restaurants, and the people so open and welcoming. And we kept on about it to Janet, and Janet said, "Oh, for God's sake, why don't you shut up about Route 66? I'll tell you what, I'll borrow my daughter's car, she lives in San Francisco, and we'll do it again." So we did it again in Janet's daughter's car.
Wow.
There's me there having to share a car with four women.
Oh dear.
Eileen, Janet, Jill, and the woman Satnav. What were they calling her? Myrtle, wasn't it? But it was almost as enjoyable as the first, because we did it that way round, we made so many good introductions with the Austin. The old thing that the Austin is that friendly car, and it makes friends.
It does.
And yeah, it was great. And really, I think we've given up the idea now, but we have sort of looked enviously at some of the other ways of doing Route 66. And I'm not talking about walking or cycling, I'm talking about coach or train, or hiring you can hire a blacktop, so-called, in America. you know, an appropriate car to do it. But I think perhaps that's that being greedy or...
Yeah.
We've got other things we can do which will be a bit more practical.
Yes.
In any case, get any medical problems in the in America, it's can be difficult.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good. Well, I mean, have you, with regard to 2022 and the centenary celebrations, will you be taking your chummy?
Well, all being well, yes. I shall probably be driving it a little bit more gently up there to make sure it lasts, because most of the time it's never been driven harder than it was on Route 66. But I do drive it fairly hard most times, until this year's Bewley. We went down to Bewley. Instead of going 2 or 3 days before and camping, we decided, because of both of our medical problems, it'd be sensible to not to camp. So we drove down to Bewley on Sunday morning, drove it very gently, still enjoyed it, and we noticed it hardly used any oil. Whereas usually when you drive it, well, you're thrashing it all the time, you know, you get a pool of oil every time you stop. And we did enjoy it. We enjoyed the drive beautifully. We found a bed and breakfast in the New Forest, and came home the following day, and I think by driving it like an old lady or an old man or whatever you like, you know, hopefully it'll last us a bit longer without major
surgery.
Yeah.
Yes. Good.
You didn't drive it that time. No. Poor old Eileen, she's got a bit out of the habit of driving it. I tend to jump in it every time, although I do say to you quite often, you know, it's going nicely, why don't you have a drive? No, you drive, you enjoy it. I do enjoy it. But I want you to enjoy it as well.
I do. I sit as passenger.
Yeah. But anyway, with this, I was banned from, or prohibited from driving by the hospital for a month, about three weeks ago. And I wanted to do our local rally. Only it's not something I'd get the long haul for. It's only about 2 miles across the road to Nedworth House. And you did agree to drive Chummy over there, but you were so nervous, weren't you? You were so nervous you even took the wrong turning, although we've been there, yeah, because it's our local country house. We know it like the back of our hands. We've walked there, we've cycled there, and been there in several different cars.
Well,
but you got there, and she didn't need anything.
Ken, thank you very much. That's really been super, and I shall edit all that up, and I'll let you have a listen to it, and I hope you think it's all right when I've done it.
Well, I hope I've done what you think's
you have.
Necessary or required.